for joining us today for the Fairlosophy podcast. We're going to be talking about everything related to fair trade fashion, including sustainability, ethics, human trafficking, our artisans, and keeping kids in school. My name is Jackie Costello, and I own the Golden Rule Boutique, an all fair trade boutique based in San Diego. My co-host is Jen Parlin, and she is a fair trade partner with Threads Worldwide based in Connecticut.
In this episode, Jackie chats with recent college grad Michaela Steiner, who majored in global studies. They dive into some of the things Michaela learned and experienced while in her studies, specifically what is happening in the fashion industry in the U.S.
Hi, Michaela. Thank you so much for joining me today for the podcast. I just wanted to start off with how we met. You had heard about the Golden Rule through a couple friends and a friend's blog, and you and Alyssa came in a couple weeks ago. We got to chatting. We had such an amazing conversation, the three of us, and you told me about some of your experiences in college. But remind me, where did you go to college and what did you study?
Right. So thank you so much for having me, first of all. Such a fun little thing to be able to do. I went to Azusa Pacific University, and I majored in global studies with a minor in journalism.
Okay, so global studies, what does that entail?
Great question. I've said this to a lot of people recently. I just graduated in May. I've gone through 4 years of the program, and I'm still kind of learning exactly how to explain what my major was. It's a big kind of mush conglomeration of things. We had to take an anthropology class. We took classes about different world religions. We took classes about economics and about politics. So it was kind of a big mix. I kind of explained it as anthropology, interdisciplinary studies, cross-disciplinary studies, kind of sociology, psychology, lots about people, lots about how people work, why people do what they do in terms of global economies, global systems, and trying to figure out kind of what our place as students and as global citizens is in that dichotomy.
Wow. Wow, that's a lot. So what can you do with that major?
Oh man, another really big, good question. Lots of things. My own personal interest is in community development. So I would love to go into maybe even some form of social work. Just working with more marginalized communities to help advocate for them. Nonprofit work with advocacy organizations, things like World Vision, like child sponsorship. I did an internship during the program at a child sponsorship office. People have gone on to become lawyers. I know a girl in my program who's currently going to law school. There's all sorts of things you can do with it. What's the word I'm looking for? Like urban planning or public policy as well. Any sort of field where you're working with people. I know people who have gone into business with it. It's just a very overarching, globally minded field of study. And so you can take that into any smaller, more specific area and apply what we've learned in that.
So did you learn about fair trade in any of your classes?
So it was in my urban societies class that we were talking a little bit about fashion and the social system of fashion. It was a 7-week course, and each week we looked at a different social system. So we looked at like food systems, we looked at homelessness, we looked at the criminal justice system, we looked at the education system, and we looked at the fashion industry for one of them. And so we didn't actually spend more than a week learning about kind of this industry more in depth. And it wasn't even specifically geared toward, well, here's what fair trade fashion is. It was just geared toward, this is the way that in our society, so in the United States, fashion plays a role in what we do and how fashion is created. This is the system behind fashion consumption. And that was really kind of it for that class.
Wow. So that's so interesting. I'm glad at least they're touching upon it. Mm-hmm. But you think, I mean, I guess kind of the problem is there's so much, you know, that you guys need to learn about.
Yeah.
You know, your major in general entails so much.
Right.
Can you tell me about this project that we talked about in the store and what it was exactly that you were assigned?
Yeah. So just to give a little bit of background, part of my major required that I spend a semester studying in a urban setting and then in kind of a rural setting. So I spent one semester of my time at APU living in inner city LA, and I spent one semester of my time living in Rwanda. And while I was in LA, we took a class, like I mentioned, called Urban Systems. And that was the class that, you know, that looked at all those different food systems, education, healthcare. And so for this class, the week that we looked at the fashion industry, we actually, so a lot of my major, kind of the premise for it is the idea of experiential learning, that students learn better hands-on rather than sitting in the classroom, hence why we have the semesters where we're in like a full immersion program somewhere. While we were there, we took this class called Urban Systems, and we had the opportunity while we were learning about fashion to go visit the Fashion Institute of Design and Merchandising, and then to go visit the Garment District in LA. So it was back-to-back. In the morning, we went to FITM, and then in the afternoon, we went and we kind of walked around the garment district. And the assignment for all of it was to write kind of a reflection paper on the fashion industry and what we had learned on our two, like, kind of field trips, if you will. And so while we were at FITM, they were talking to us about, you know, sustainability in fashion and how long it takes for the things that we wear to kind of decompose in landfills, how much water goes into making certain clothes. Like how long it takes, like sneakers, for example, to break down in a landfill. All of the environmental side of fashion. And then when we, after lunch, we went and walked around the garment district, and our professor said, okay, break off into pairs, two by two, and I'm going to show you a couple different factories. And I just want you to walk upstairs, go find their manager, and just ask kind of, you know, how they got involved in, you know, garment creation, how they got involved in working in the factory, ask them, you know, how long they've been doing it. Don't ask them anything about what they pay their workers. Don't ask them anything about who they make clothes for, but just kind of ask almost like the human interest side of things. So ask about them and how they got involved and why they're doing it, and what they kind of get out of it. So we broke off into pairs, and my professor showed me and my partner this little, we walked around the corner to this almost like a little convenience store bodega type thing, and walked through it to a set of stairs that was in the back, and walked, and he was like, okay, go on up there. No, you're good.
Can I ask you a real question? Question, absolutely. Beforehand? So yeah. can we back up just a step?
And absolutely.
I'm wondering what you thought was going to happen before you went into the factories. Like, did you know that? Because we had talked already. I know what you had seen. But did you think that's what you were going to see? Or were you not having any expectations? Did you talk to your classmates? That kind of stuff.
So because we were all like standing outside on the sidewalk, there were 10 of us in the program at the time. And so we're standing outside on the sidewalk with my professor. There's 11 people standing in the middle of the sidewalk in like the garment district of LA. And he's going, okay, I'm going to take you to these factories. And he's like, you can't call them sweatshops. You can't ask how much people are paid. You know, just ask the manager these questions. And we're going, okay, well, like, are we allowed to be up there? And he was like, well, they can't stop you. They can't kick you out. Like, just go and ask questions. And we're like, well, this seems kind of like backhanded. Like, we're trying to figure out if these factories are, essentially, if these factories are following labor code or not, without asking whether or not they're following labor code, because we don't want to freak people out. And he was like, well, your goal isn't to incriminate, it's to learn. And I was like, we're all kind of like, okay, but like, are you sure this is something we're supposed to be doing? Are we allowed to do this? Like, none of us knew what we were going to walk into, but the way that our professor set it up definitely made it feel a little questionable, I guess. Not necessarily sketchy. In a bad way, but yeah, kind of sketchy. Like, what are we, like, are we even allowed to walk into where we're about to walk into? Because he was like, well, they don't know you're coming. Like, they don't. And we were like, okay, what is going on? He's like, it's okay. I do this every year. Like, don't worry about it. So we're like, okay, we'll trust you. But, you know, he was like, we're breaking off into two so that we don't overwhelm them with a group of 10 people. And then you guys can come back and kind of share your experience. And I'll show you where to go. And we're like, okay. And so then as we're kind of like walking through this like very random convenience store, mm-hmm. That's when I was kind of like, okay, like, I really have no idea what I'm about to go see. And we had been reading, one of our textbooks kind of talked about each of the systems. So we would do, like a handful of reading before that week that we were learning about whatever system it was. And so our reading for that week for the fashion industry talked about kind of the setup of what sweatshops often look like. Or even factories often look like that are, you know, factories that are following labor laws and practices. Because the difference between, you know, a factory and a sweatshop is just that workers are paid fairly or unfairly, or that, you know, labor policies are being followed in a factory, and it's fair and safe working conditions versus a sweatshop is just not.
Right. Overcrowded.
Right.
Overcrowded or children working. I don't think mm-hmm. that's the case in LA that you saw, but
no.
You know, all over the world.
No.
Bonded labor.
Right.
Exploitation.
That would be absolutely a sweatshop. So we're reading about sweatshops and specifically in the US. And I think our textbook, if I remember correctly, I think our textbook was written by our professor. So it was one of those, like, he had experienced it for so long that he wrote text about it, and I don't remember exactly. I'd have to go like double check what our textbook was. But we were reading about how often the workers, the people behind kind of the machines and, you know, doing the actual labor are usually Hispanic, Latin American, and then the manager is usually Asian. And that's kind of the breakdown of most factories in the U.S. and or sweatshops. So
did
that
you
wasn't
learn
really...
why that was?
So we talked about how often, especially in a sweatshop situation, that undocumented immigrants would come to the U.S. and need a job. And one of the easiest jobs to get is to work in a factory or sweatshop because they don't check your documentation. They won't check for, you know, if it is a sweatshop and they really don't care kind of what's going on, you're cheap labor and they don't need to verify your identity in any way. Especially if you don't have documents, they understand that they can abuse the workers and there's no repercussions for it because the workers can't blow any whistles since they don't have documentation. So as soon as they, you know, they cry foul, they're also going to be deported in some aspect. A lot of the immigrant workers also, even if they did have green cards, it was common for the managers or even higher ups in the kind of tier of things to take documentation so that, again, if they blow the whistle, they don't even have the documents to prove. So it almost becomes like a human trafficking situation in which these people don't have any backup support of their own within the government structure to say, you know, we're being abused. And something that really stuck out to me then during the reading was the idea that a lot of times it's cheaper to pay the fine or to pay the penalty for being caught as a factory or a sweatshop when you're abusing labor practices. It's a lot easier and cheaper to pay that fine than it is to pay your workers fairly.
Oh my God. That's ridiculous.
Yeah. So it's the system within the US, the way that things are set up is almost, not even almost, it is backwards to the point
Totally.
of it's easier to cheat the system than it is to run a business fairly.
Right.
And of course, I mean, people are going to buy the products because the products come out cheaper as well. I can't afford to buy all my things ethically and fair trade. Like it doesn't, not sustainable for my wallet as someone who just graduated from college.
Totally.
It's a lot easier for me to go shop at, Forever 21 or something where t-shirts are like $3, $4. But
But Forever 21 is now going
they
bankrupt.
are going bankrupt. I did hear that this morning and I did a little happy dance, but that's okay.
Well, just because you brought it up, I always, always, always want to tell people when they say, "Oh, I can't afford fair trade and I can't afford ethical fashion or sustainable fashion." I totally get that. But there are so many thrift shops. Like so many thrift shops and thrift stores, and there's so much overabundance of clothing now at this point that you don't have a problem finding a thrift shop. You know what I mean? Like there's so many. And there's so many online ones now that you can shop used ethical brands, which are great options. So I definitely want to touch upon that just since you brought it up.
Well, we're used to consuming at such a high rate, especially with fashion, that to make the switch to, okay, well, I need a new pair of black jeans. That was my thing for a while. I was like, I need a new pair of black jeans. And like thrift shop after thrift shop, like didn't have my size or didn't have like the style that I wanted. Whereas like I know if I just go to like American Eagle or something, like they're gonna have the size and style that I want because it's big fashion. But it's that it's getting used to, okay, well, I mean, I don't need black jeans right now. Like I can wait and I can find things, or I can go find a pair of ethically made ones that I like and I can save up, I can budget for it. But it's that level of consumption, it has to change. Our patterns have to change in order for this to be a sustainable thing. And I think a lot of us in America aren't willing to do that, which is what makes it so difficult and why that excuse becomes so easy. It's like, well, it's just too
It's
expensive.
not easy, it's not convenient, so I need it right now and I can't wait.
I want the convenience. Yeah, exactly.
Totally. Okay, so let's go back to the scene. So you're on the sidewalk and you are about to walk into the factories. You're getting kind of a little sketched out and you go up with your partner.
So I went up with my partner. Her name is Val, just in case I reference her later in the story. I'll just use her name and we'll all know who I'm talking about. So brings us into this little convenience store type thing and to the set of stairs in the back, and he leaves us at the base of the stairs, and he's like, if you go up like the first flight of stairs, there's a factory up there. And we were like, okay. So he like walks out of the convenience store, and my friend and I are just standing there like, you first, like, no, you first, no, you first. And I mean, the stairs are wide enough, so finally I was like, okay, come on, like, just walk next to me, we'll be fine. And as we're going up the stairs, it's like that, those kinds of stairs that you go up halfway and you hit a landing and then you turn the opposite way, so it's like weirdly spirally or whatever that's called. I don't know, it's got a name, but not important. So we went up the first set of stairs to the landing, and as soon as we hit that first landing, which we could see from standing at the bottom of the stairs, like it was not that high up, we can start hearing like the whirring of sewing machines. And so we turn the next landing, and get to the top of the first set, and there's this like screen door, but it's like one of those metal screen doors that you put on like the outside of houses. And then like another door on the inside, but it's open. And we like can't really totally see through the metal door. So we kind of knock and like no one comes to answer or anything. And the sewing machines, I mean, you can hear that there's like hundreds of sewing machines behind this screen door because it's just whirring and it's loud. And so we like try the handle and it's unlocked. So we walk in and there is a good handful of people standing closer to the door. And as soon as we walk in, they like freeze, like eyes super wide. Like, oh my gosh. And we look at them, we're like, hi, is your manager here? Like, we'd like to speak to your boss. And, you know, a lot of them are like, I don't speak English, like, not English. So eventually, like, we would tell them, you know, we're looking for your boss. And they go and they grab their manager. And he's like, we're like, can we just have some questions? Like, we're students. We're trying to learn about, you know, the fashion industry and factories. And we just have some questions for you, if you wouldn't mind us just, like, asking you a few questions. Excuse me. And he's like, nope, sorry, I don't have time to talk. Like, no, you no, no. We don't, like, what, no, I don't have time. Like, you need to leave, you need to leave. And we were like, well, we just have you, nope, sorry, like, you need to leave. And we were like, okay, we'll leave. So we left. And then we kept going up. And so then we got to the second story. Same thing, like this metal fence. This one was locked and no one would answer it, but you could like hear all the sewing machines behind it. So we went up to the third story and then we walked into the factory up there again. Same thing, tons of sewing machines. And there was a table right at the front as we walked in that had, I mean, just these huge stacks of t-shirts on them. And there were two workers that were placing like price tags on them, like brand price tags. And they were for Rue 21. And I remember like looking down at them and being like, great, good to know. I mean, I could have told you that one, but like, great, good to know. And then we asked them, you know, like, is your manager here? And they went and grabbed him. And yeah, something that was interesting is, you know, we had read about kind of the demographics of what these factories most likely looked like. And it was totally true. All of the workers were, you know, Hispanic, Latin American, in descent, and then all the managers were of Asian descent. And so, you know, they bring the manager over, and we're like, "Okay, we just have a few questions." And he was like, "Yeah, of course. Like, what do you want to know?" He was super, super sweet. And we're like, "Okay, so maybe this isn't as sketchy as we thought." Like the first factory kind of really freaked us out because we're like, "Okay, they really don't want to talk to us, and they look really afraid of us. So something bad is probably happening here." And like, it was just one of those situations right. Where like you walk in and it's already uncomfortable because of what you're seeing happen. Like seeing clothes being produced on that kind of a scale, just in that manner, like these aren't beautifully lit, nice little upper rooms. They're like these weird, dingy, halogen light rooms that are just packed with sewing machines. So like even if
so are the people like on top of each other too? Like that's what I envision, and I don't know if that's necessarily true. Like how close, you know, I remember in one of the documentaries I was watching that there was just no room in between the people.
The first one,
you know,
was a little more packed, the one that we weren't able to speak to the manager. But the second one was a little more open. And the second one was also, like I said, a top floor. It was a third story and that was the top story. So they actually had like a bit of a higher ceiling, which I think made it look maybe a little more open. But it was almost like I said, there was a table at the front, like a long, long, skinny, kind of almost like production line table, at the front with those stacks of clothing on it. And then behind it, there's clotheslines running over all of the sewing machines, so they could, you know, hang things if they needed to. The first one that we walked into, I think they were actually making jeans, so there was a lot of denim everywhere. The second one was like t-shirts. And I almost want to say, yeah, I think the spacing was almost close to like, if you think like a really, really, really big, like classroom, you know, like the desks next to each other in the rows, it was kind of like that. Mm-hmm. And so you couldn't walk like on the right or the left of a desk, but you could walk in front of or behind a desk.
Okay.
That makes sense.
Yeah. So they're so close next to each other.
So it's, yeah, it's just long, skinny rows, and you kind of go to the end of the row and you walk all the way down to your machine or whatever. Or if your machine's in the middle, you choose an end and you walk to it. You can't kind of cut through the middle of a row. So.
Okay, so the second guy was able to talk to you and seemed much more friendly. And what were you able to ask him?
Yeah, so he was able to talk to us. So we asked him, the questions that professor had told us to ask, kind of, okay, well, how did you get involved in fashion industry, in making clothes? His answer, I believe, was something along the lines of, oh, well, I've just been doing it forever. It's like, okay, but like, how did you start? I've just been doing it forever. Okay, next question. Like, sure, that's all you're going to keep saying. And then kind of how the system works in terms of, okay, well, how do you know what clothes to make? He explained, the process to us that we had kind of already read about, that there's a bigger corporation that will send in an order to his boss, who then who probably owns a handful of different factories, and then he'll send the order to the manager, and then the manager will make the product. I don't know exactly where the supplies come from. I think they come from the corporation that like kind of sends the order down, or they come from potentially a separate manufacturer, maybe one of the different factories, because in this, the one that we walked into, they were just assembling t-shirts. So they had like front, back, sleeve. So they would sew together like one side, another front and back are together, and they'd sew on a sleeve and then sew on the other sleeve, and that would be the t-shirt. And I don't know if they did different work in that factory, but that's what we saw then. And so we're kind of asking, how does it work? And, he gets this order and this order and this order, and they just fill the orders and they send them back out. And usually they have, the deadlines will be different, but usually they have no more than like 2 months to fill an order, and the orders, will be hundreds to thousands of this product at one time. They've got, a month or so to get done. And so that's what he was saying. He was like, we're kind of in the last stages of this line because they're punching, price tags onto these shirts for Rue 21. And then he volunteered the information that his workers were paid per piece. He was like, yep, we pay them for each thing that they can put, each piece of clothing they can sew on. And that wasn't a question that we were allowed to ask.
Being paid.
We weren't allowed to ask how they were being paid. He volunteered the information. And I remember he said that, and my partner and I kind of like stopped. Our eyes got a little wider. But we're also trying to, remain calm and like have a professional kind conversation with this man. But I remember we kind of glanced at each other really quickly, and then glanced back and glanced at our notes and, okay, do you mind if we ask you like two or three more questions? And I don't remember exactly, what we asked him, but yeah, just the kind of the process and what that looks like. And so, but it was, I remember that piece of, oh, we pay them per piece. But I that kind of stopped me in my tracks, and I really don't remember the rest of the conversation because I was so stuck on, okay, so we weren't supposed to call these sweatshops until we found enough information to say like, oh, that's probably a sweatshop. And so I'm sitting there going, probably standing in the middle of a sweatshop. Like, I'm probably standing here and all these clothes are being made by people who may or may not be being treated well, but they're right. Certainly not being paid fairly. So what do I do? And like, I'm standing here and I'm seeing it and I'm in the middle of it right now, and I literally can't do anything about it. Like, I can't change it. I can't make it stop. So we thanked him for his time, and then my partner and I ended up walking down the stairs again. And right across the street, there was a little coffee shop that we had been to earlier in the semester. It's like this super little hole in the wall, but super like hipster, grungy, like downtown LA fun coffee shop. And we sat down there to kind of write out some more notes so that we could write our paper. And I remember sitting there with her writing out the notes, and I turned around, and from where we were sitting in the coffee shop, you could see the factory, like kitty corner to us. And you could see, you could see the different stories, and I was like, I know exactly like which one is which. But it just kind of looks like a little bit of a rundown, kind of unassuming building with this little convenience shop underneath. And there was a huge like blue awning on the outside that said thread and supply. And that was it. Like I wouldn't think to look at it and be like, oh, I wonder what's happening in those three stories of building above it. But all these people were sitting in this coffee shop. And I remember looking at my partner and I was like, literally nobody knows what's happening across the street in that building, and then in that building, and in that building, and in that building, and in that building that all of my other classmates just walked into. Like all of these buildings, probably the one that we're sitting in, because we're on a ground level. Like the stories above us probably have something happening in them. And nobody
So
knows it.
what else were your classes find classmates finding? Did they find anything worse than what you heard about the pay for price, or was it similar things?
It was similar things. My partner and I, when we were like, oh, the manager that we talked to volunteered, but they were paid per piece. Everyone was like, oh, oh, okay, we didn't get that kind of information. We were like, yeah, it wasn't great. And then another pair of my classmates, they walked upstairs and they ended up talking to this manager that, and they gave a name brand. I don't remember which one it was, but we were all like, oh, really? Because the manager was talking about how, they follow some form of like fair trade certification. I don't remember exactly which one it was, similar to like B Corp or something like
I
that.
see.
Where, don't remember what it was, but they were like, yeah, the manager was like, yep, we paid them this much. Like we paid them this much per hour. You're welcome to talk to the workers if you'd like to. They got a whole rundown of how this factory was paying their workers super well and how their workers all had health benefits. They all had all these things, and all the workers were like, yeah, this is great. Like we get time off, we get time and a half, like we get holiday hours, we get this, we get that. They don't work us longer than I think they weren't allowed to work longer than like 50 hours a week. Which is, like time and a half essentially. And I mean, we don't know anything about any of the workers in ours, because part of it was just go talk to the manager.
And the
We didn't
manager
want to.
wasn't like, oh, do you want to talk
Right.
to
But when my classmates were talking to the manager in that factory, he was like, oh, you want to talk to the workers? Sure. So I mean, they encountered one that apparently was functioning how it should have been and functioning well. But that definitely, out of five groups of us that went up to factories, that was just a one. And then all the rest of us encountered very similar situations of,
So
oh, we don't want to talk to you.
in at least 10 factories that you walked up to, right? So you at least went to two each.
Yeah, we tried to. So like I think one or two groups only went to one.
Okay, so how did you feel afterwards and how did your classmates feel?
I think we were all in shock a little bit. I know I was. And I definitely remember feeling angry. Like I said, I was sitting in the middle of this factory, looking at probably what was a sweatshop condition, and people who weren't being paid fairly, when, earlier that week I had just realized that just because something's made in the USA doesn't mean it's made ethically. Like that was news to me.
Yeah. And it's funny because, yeah, and I used to tell customers, the laws are so different in the United States. Like you can still buy USA made, but that's really not true. I kind of knew that there were sweatshops in LA and things like that, but hadn't really known of evidence of it, I guess. Yeah, I would not tell people to shop USA made unless they really research the company and that kind of stuff, which that's hard to do even anyways, but
I was gonna say, What's so interesting about USA Made is there is kind of this whole movement now toward, ethically, sustainably sourced things, ethically made things. And it's almost become a fad to be like, locally owned and made, or locally owned and processed, or whatever. Or, we've got this bent toward the environment. But, just because something is environmentally conscious doesn't mean they're also honoring, the rights of the human beings making the product. And just because, it's locally owned and operated doesn't mean that it's owned or operated well. And so it's so interesting to kind of, I've done my own research about things, and the companies that kind of have these slogans that sound good on paper, on the surface, their laws are so vague and their labor practices are so vague. And it's the ones that are able to straight up say, you know what, we're not great, but we're working on it. Or this is what we're doing clearly. And even if it's something that I don't think is the best or that I want to support, companies that can clearly state, this is what we're doing, this is how our things are made, or this is what we're doing, this is how our things are made, and we know that's not the greatest, but here are our goals and
Exactly.
here are what we're doing to achieve those goals. Those are the companies I am all in for.
Yeah.
Those are the ones that I'm totally behind.
I was literally just going to say the same thing. Transparency is everything. And then if they're saying this is where we're at and this is our goal to be by, 2022 or whatever it is, that shows that they know the issues and that they're really working to go to get through them. How have you changed your shopping habits since your experience?
Yeah, a lot. I was actually, so I went back. This experience happened for me in 2017. So I actually went back and I read the paper that I wrote about it in preparation for this interview, just to kind of refresh my memory, anything in the paper that maybe I had forgotten about, which I had. So it was very helpful. But the paper was kind of broken down into, to explain what we saw and experienced, and then we had to kind of interpret it a little bit in terms of our reading. We had to, give our own, what are we going to do now about it type thing. And in my, what am I going to do now? I wrote, I can't change the system entirely. Like, I can't all by myself just decide, sorry, we're going to do away with factories now. Ta-da, everything's fixed. But I can make my own changes. And I remember typing my paper and rereading it that I wrote, I am not, like, I can't be complicit in this. I can't just pretend like I don't know about it anymore, because I do. And knowing about something, whether I like it or not, gives me responsibility for it. And now that I have a responsibility, I have to do something about it. Because I can no longer sit back and say, oh, well, I didn't know. And like, there's a level of ignorance where, like, yeah, I didn't know until 2 years ago that these things were happening in the US. Like, I had no context for it, and I had no idea, like, not even an inkling. I knew it happened in other countries, didn't realize it happened here. But now that I know, I can't not act on it. And so my decision from that point was, okay, I can't rightly justify buying clothing or other products that I know are not made sustainably, or they're not made ethically. They're made at the expense of other humans, and their rights and their comforts. And so I literally, like, cold turkey, and I was a big old fashionista. I loved buying clothes. Just stopped buying things unless it was from a thrift store, or unless I could source where it was from, and I could source way back in the supply chain too. Not just like, oh, well, we pay our workers fairly, but we get our cotton from the slave trade in wherever. Like, if I could source all the way back in the supply chain to, where We're paying the laborers who are picking our cotton fairly, and we're paying the people who spin our thread fairly, and we're paying the people who dye our cloth fairly, and then we're paying the people who sew together our pieces of cloth fairly. Unless I could source all of that, I wouldn't buy it, which is a lot of things.
It is a lot of things, yeah.
Oh, a lot of things don't source anything. So it was a lot of thrift stores, which I already love thrift stores. So just a lot more thrift stores, and just doing a lot of research, finding other organizations that help do the research for me.
Totally.
Rather than doing them myself.
Yep.
And a lot of things, like I'm a really big fan of Levi's now because they have a very good initiative for, you know what, we're not great, but this is where we source from these things. This is where we source from this stuff. And this is where we want to be. And this is what we're doing to get there. So they're not incredible yet. But they're also not all bad yet. And so, yeah, one of those things where in my mind, I can support that. I can support wanting to work to be better. And in the meantime, I'm just going to pray for the hands that made the things that I put on my body every day.
Yeah.
So
I love that. That's beautiful.
Definitely stopped buying. Stop consuming in that way.
Yeah. And it takes – sometimes it takes a shock like that to really make you change your habits, you know. And it's kind of weird that I'm going to use this example, but like seeing how I'm not sure if you're vegetarian or vegan or if you have any thoughts about that at all, but like if you're seeing like videos over and over again about animals being slaughtered and, you know, their experiences mm-hmm. of living in, you know, a meat factory, not a meat factory because that's not the right word, but an animal
like a slaughterhouse.
Yeah, like a slaughterhouse
situation.
Yeah, like the step before that, like a farm, but it's not a farm.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like losing
right.
the word right now. But if you're seeing those videos over and over again but then not doing anything about it, it's kind of similar, which
mm-hmm.
I know people have done that. Like they've seen these videos, made the change, and then they go back to what's easier. So,
mm-hmm.
And it's the same thing, just a different issue, you know? If you're learning
yeah.
so much about something, you really have to follow through and make the hard decision.
Well, it was so interesting for me, you know, coming back from that semester of learning, and there were a lot of things. Like, that was not the only thing that I changed that semester. There were a lot of things that I was like, this is how I'm going to do things differently, or this is now what I know. And just the... You know, people are like, okay, well, what, you know, what did you learn? What impacted you most? That was my go-to thing because it really was, it was such a shock for me. And I remember I called my mom either that night or the next day when I was trying to write my paper. This was a hard semester. We were just learning about a lot of really hard realities, like every week,
yeah,
and just
totally.
Being shocked by it. And I remember calling my mom just in tears. I was like, I can't do this. I can't finish this program. I can't finish this degree. Like, this is going to just wreck me, because that semester, honestly, and it's been explained by this like this over and over by students in the program, is that it's really a semester of deconstruction.
Mm.
It completely strips you down of all the things you thought you knew about the world, and then forces you to make your own conclusions again.
Yeah, I love that.
And to create
it's
your
hard
own
going
practices.
Through it. But...
It's so hard because you are just stripped down to the bones. And I mean, APU is a private Christian college. A lot of students in the Global Studies program have left the program because it's too hard, or have like walked away from their faith because they just can't see how the Lord would work in things like this, like how that's even possible.
Yeah.
There can't possibly be a God because they just feel so stripped. And that's like, it's fair, it's valid, because it's so hard.
I think because all of these issues are so well hidden,
oh my
that
gosh.
It is such a shock when you start, you know, and learning all of them at once too. It's
mm-hmm.
it's really, really hard.
Yeah.
But there is action that you could be taking, like
mm-hmm.
to make it and turn it into a beautiful story,
yeah.
you know?
Yeah.
So.
Well, and something else that's so interesting that I want to add to is that my next class that same semester was an immigration class. So it's called Immigration and Integration, which was super interesting in the spring of 2017 when Trump had just been put in office. That's a whole nother story. But Our professor was Korean, and his mom immigrated to the US. She was undocumented and she worked in a sweatshop. And so at one point, he kind of started sharing his life story about, my mom worked in a sweatshop, my mom this. And we all stopped and we were like, hold up. Like, your mom worked in a sweatshop? Like, we just learned about this like 3 weeks ago.
Right.
Like, what did that look like? What was her experience? And he was like, well, she used to take me to work with her all the time because I couldn't be in school. Like, she couldn't do this, she couldn't do that. He is a professor at AP, or was a professor at APU. He's married, has like three kids. I think he lived in like Diamond Bar or Pasadena, and has like two doctorates, like super educated and well off. Like, he's doing well for himself, and so is like his mom and the rest of his family. And I remember we were all asking these questions about sweatshops and things, and we were like, well, like, isn't that bad? Isn't that awful? Like, was she okay? Were you okay? And he was like, yeah, she worked really hard. Like, she would work to the point of exhaustion and getting sick, and like, they weren't good working conditions. But our family had no other choice, and that's why we're able to be where we are now.
Yeah.
And like,
I think that's also what people, I mean, I think that he has turned, that into a beautiful story because
absolutely.
they have gotten out of it and all of that. But I think that's one of the things, if you've watched the True Cost documentary, they start interviewing people that either own sweatshops or that kind of stuff, and they're like, we're providing people opportunities, and and that's honestly, that's bullshit.
Yeah.
Like I think for him to say that later on, like, they've gotten through it and
Yeah.
that was a stepping stone for them. But people that own sweatshops should just be paying people fairly. They should not be using that as an
Oh,
excuse
absolutely not.
to give people opportunities. So I just
Absolutely
want to
not.
make a point and kind of drive
Yeah.
that home.
No, that's so good. I just think, like, my point with saying all that is, like, what was so hard for me and is still so hard for me is, like, it's not this black and white thing necessarily, as much as we maybe want it to be, I
Yeah.
guess. Because,
Yeah.
like, even if, like, oh, I would love every single person making our clothes around the world to be paid fairly. Absolutely. Like, that is so important to me. Don't get me wrong. But to change that suddenly, which isn't, I mean, it can't happen suddenly, but to just think that the solution is to change the way that people are being paid is not necessarily always the solution, because that might not be sustainable. That might have unintended consequences that we don't realize. And like, that
Right,
was so
but
hard for me too.
yeah, that is hard,
But it
but
doesn't excuse the actions that are currently happening either.
no. I was just gonna say that voting with our dollar has really made an impact, because we just mentioned before how Forever 21 has gone
Oh, yeah.
bankrupt, and a lot of fast fashion stores that is happening to. I still think it's going to exist because it's always going to be a market for it, but the more we're voting with our dollar and putting that towards the right places and the right companies, the more those companies can survive. And the more we're taking things out of landfills by shopping at thrift stores, and the more those companies are going to take a hit. So I think, even though it can be daunting, like, when every time you vote with your dollar, you really are making an impact.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, thank you, Michaela, so much for hopping on today. I'm sure we could talk for hours, just like that first day we met. And thank you for bringing light to this issue.
We hope you enjoyed this conversation with Michaela, as we were able to shed some light on the realities of the garment factories in LA. Unfortunately, we don't have enough information on what workers are making per piece to fully understand the conditions mentioned in the stories, but are thankful for the insight we did gain.
Here at the Fairlosophy Podcast, we recognize that we do not live in a bubble. We are all connected. There are people behind every product we shop for, and we can influence their lives when we vote with our dollar. If you like this episode, take a screenshot and share it on your social media. When you do, you'll be entered to win a giveaway that we will do live on Instagram once a month. tag us and follow us at The Fairlosophy Podcast. Good luck. We'll be right back.